The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back as we head into the third hour. I'd like to do so as we usually do most Thursdays when he's in town. We do it with Sam Stone. Sam Stone for your ride home. He is a political consultant in town, a radio host in his own right, Breaking Battlegrounds, heard here every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. And he is on Twix, Twitter X, at Sam the Paul, P-O-L. Happy Thursday, Sammy.
Happy Thursday to you and everyone out there listening, Seth.
I invented a new game. You have to guess the product being advertised based on the commercial jingle. Doesn't that sound like fun?
Oh, that does sound like fun, actually.
So I'll give you, you want to play? You want to try?
All right, sure.
Baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet.
Wait, do that again.
Baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet.
I'm assuming that's a Chevy commercial, unless it's baseball.
Unless Ford is really dumb, right?
Right.
So kiss a little longer, make it last a little longer, longer with Big Red.
Big Red.
Ah,
yeah.
See, you're batting 1,000, buddy. It's a fun game, isn't it?
Well, it's easy. When
maybe I need more sleep.
It away. You need ones that don't include the name of the sponsor at the end of the jingle.
Maybe I need more sleep.
Yeah. Speaking of sleep,
yeah.
Because it's nighttime over in Europe right now, and something's been going on there that I think I've talked to a lot of people here in this country about, and I don't think even most people understand that it's happening or know that it's happening. Outside of the Ukraine war,
yeah,
the farmer protests in Europe
are maybe the
most significant European event of the year.
Good. Talk about
it. And they're totally uncovered. I was just before the show, I was seeing a new piece on a huge expansion of the protests tonight in Germany. Peter Sweden, if you're not following him on Twix, you should be. He's doing great coverage of it. These farmers across Europe, you know, UK, Scotland, Ireland, Spain, France, Italy, on and on and on, are shutting down major cities for hours at a time. They are dumping, you know, fertilizer and manure on the steps of their parliament.
Mm-hmm.
They are throwing a huge protest over these policies, which are basically designed, these green policies designed to put them entirely out of business.
Yep.
This is big stuff, and it's totally uncovered here, which I find astounding, but it says so much about our current media environment.
Kind of a populist thing in the sense that you don't really get more populist than the people that grow your food and harvest it. And I wonder if you think this is somewhat analogous to Brexit in 2015, 2016, if it spells something important that Europe is trying to tell America.
I think it does. I think it's much bigger than people realize, even these protests, but also behind the scenes, you're seeing a lot of these sort of, international class of politicians across Europe losing races.
Yeah.
And obviously they haven't lost power to the populist wings, entirely, but there's a big shift underway across the planet. It's not just Donald Trump in the United States. It is really across all of the Western world that you're seeing a huge pushback against the globalist and green agenda. And, I mean, overdue pushback, quite frankly, but really significant in a way. Brexit was at least covered, even though it was covered.
You're right.
With great spin here mm-hmm. in the United States and elsewhere, right? It was the end of everything,
right.
And obviously that's not been the case.
Right.
These are essentially, they've just decided we're not going to cover this because it refutes so many elements of the American left narrative.
Well, you know, you could look at a few things that way, I think. particularly when it comes to illegal immigration, particularly when it comes to crime. A state you know probably a little bit better than most, Oregon and their drug laws. All these woke policies, Sam, people have woken up to as if Rip Van Winkle saying, how the heck did this happen? Well, you caused it is how it happened. And the consequences are your doing. And now they are pulling their hair out, trying to undo them. But it's not getting a lot of coverage, even here.
It's not at all. And I think part of it is that there's a very good piece I read, which was, again, another thing. If you're not following him on Twix, you should be. Noah Pinion, blog, N-O-A-H Pinion. Very good piece on San Francisco, which, similar to Seattle and Oregon, is kind of doing a U-turn on some things. Yep. There was a number of votes there that really put the hammer down on the far left. And, you know, he broke it down as this isn't what the right seems to think it is, which is a rejection of leftism as a whole. But this is a rejection, in his view, of the ineffective leftism, of leftism that clearly does not work, whose policies have failed nationally and internationally.
The kind of leftism Bill Maher decries.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is essentially the leftism Bill Maher decries versus the leftism he embraces.
Correct. Right? Correct. Yes. Well put.
And I think that is absolutely true that is going on. I think, though, that's more significant than he or maybe Bill Maher would understand, because the extreme left forces that have driven the Democrat agenda for the last 5-6 years are not going quietly.
No.
And
yeah,
the intermittent fighting is going to become a bigger and bigger deal for them.
Yeah, that's a good point. Two illustrative lanterns on this, if I might, as I'm thinking out loud on this with you, and you and I didn't, you know, we didn't prepare on this. It's just, yeah, no, it's just interesting as I'm thinking out loud, see if I have this right. On the hard left, not backing off. Look at the reaction Joe Biden got in talking about Lake and Riley's alleged murderer as illegal. It took about 72 hours for him to retract that, because they aren't going to back off. I suppose that's lantern one. Lantern two, though, Dr. Phil McGraw on The View, getting a round of applause from an audience of liberal ladies, typically liberal ladies, when he said the COVID policies on schools harmed the children far more than COVID itself. Two different things, two different, they're contrasting in a way, but there's something going on here.
Well, there is, and look, I think it's been very clear to those of us on the right, it's been hidden by the mainstream media on the left, just how bad Democrats have been at governing things, or leftists, if you want to put it that way, have been at governing things here and across the world.
Like major cities, for one.
Yeah, major cities, but you can look at almost any area of policy, whether it's immigration, which is just destroying Europe, and now destroying this country. If it's crime and inner cities, if you're talking about education, there, you know, I mean, issue after issue after issue, the far left has instituted systems that are disastrously inept. That achieve none of the aims they claim to be attempting to achieve.
So let me throw let me throw this then at you. I was talking to John Shattuck about this on the show yesterday. With all that going on and the very clear evidence of what the soft on crime stuff has been doing, what the soft on illegal immigration, if you even want to call it a policy at all, has been doing with the economic, the cost of living prices that people are now finally waking up to in parts of the Democratic Party that didn't used to seem to say much about it. Why are we not winning running away? Is the ideology in this country so culturally hardened that people just cannot get over their leftist predilections? Is it the media has done such a good job of painting all Republicans as fascists? Is it something else? Is it 40 years of colleges churning out millions of students steeped in socialism? What, maybe a little of everything because with all the indicia, you would think we'd be at least 55-45 in the polls, you would think.
You would think. I think part of it is the hardening. I think some people will try to say that it's because of Donald Trump, but, you know, let's be honest, the left treated Mitt Romney.
I think that's exactly right. Let me take a commercial break and we'll plumb this a little bit further, because it's a curiosity to me. And yeah, I do think there's something to the damnation of Donald Trump, or the damning of him. But you're absolutely right. They said the same things about McCain, Romney, Bush, and Reagan. Maybe it's more prevalent because of social media. We'll pick on this bone a little bit more when we come back. Sam Stone is my guest. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show, brought to you by the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group, your trusted source for precious metals. Sam Stone is my guest, a political consultant, radio host, Breaking Battlegrounds, heard here every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. So, yeah, the question abides, Sam. What are the reasons conservatives, Republicans carrying conservative messages, aren't just smashing through the walls of the polls with the policies the left has wrought on us and that people are waking up to? Yeah, that's the thought.
Well, and part of it's been one of the things that's a running theme that you and I talk about, which is what, you know, post-2016 – the media learned a lesson from Donald Trump. They trashed him relentlessly, the mainstream media. But they did give him an opportunity to come on there and speak directly to people. And in so doing, much to their shock and chagrin, people actually liked what they heard. Mm-hmm. He was overcoming the messaging that they were delivering. And since 2016, if you look around, for instance, there are no strong conservative voices anywhere on more than half the media spectrum.
Okay.
Yep. None. Okay. I mean, so it's hard to get a message across, to counter it, an electoral message, if you're not even given an opportunity to talk to those people. But the other thing has been the acceleration in institutional capture. And there was a tweet today by Professor Carol Sikora, I retweeted. You can find it on my Twitter feed or Twix feed. He is the founding dean of University of Buckingham Medical Center, ex-director of the WHO Cancer Program. Cambridge University announcing that they are taking down a bunch of paintings because paintings of the British countryside can, quote, evoke dark nationalist feelings.
I'm looking at it now. This is jaw dropping.
Yeah, I mean, and Professor Sikora, retweeted that with, "Very disappointed to see this from my former university. To be completely honest, I am utterly sick and tired of this nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We all know it's ludicrous, so how on earth does it keep happening? Rolling English hills aren't racist, they're hills."
Yep. Yep.
The point about how it keeps happening and the, you know, him being sick of it, the reason it keeps happening is institutional capture. That there are all these people in all these institutions, from government to universities to business, who are under the thumb of a DEI CRT-based ideological regime emanating from their HR departments and emanating from their PR departments, that has come to dominate those mediums, including all those companies and the institutions, the government institutions, and on and on and on. And that is the firewall, I believe. When you combine that with the blackout, it's really hard to break through. It requires a lot of courage, quite frankly, for a person who's trapped behind those walls to break through them.
It's that. And it's another thing you tweeted out, Sam, I think. We could do this any number of ways, but most recently an associate director at the Secretary of Defense's office saying we should have open borders and we should repeal the Second Amendment. The idea that there are people in our government saying these things at fairly high levels, but even if they were at fairly low levels, it would be just as bad, maybe worse. Because that's where the real work gets done, you know?
Worse was one little part of that. So that's from the latest James O'Keefe work. But one of the things he said is even more concerning when you get down to it. The person he was interviewing, who is a high-level person at the DOD, who helped set policy between the White House and the DOD, said, The nation, the state should have a monopoly on guns and on power.
Right.
That is a very totalitarian viewpoint. And it's worth noting that this leftism that they claim is so freeing is the most restrictive human ideology ever invented. It controls, if they're successful, it controls every aspect of your life, including what you're allowed to say and think. Look at what Canada is doing in a law supported by the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, which has the ability to put people in jail for life for saying things online that people don't like. It even gives them the ability to put people in jail up to life if there's the likelihood they may say those things.
And, of course, they'll put people like Jordan Peterson through the professional wringer, depriving him of his license to practice psychology if he doesn't toe the line of the political authority.
His license is gone. Right. I mean, that process has not been completed, but his license is gone. If I had one thing to say to Jordan Peterson and his daughter and family and everyone who works with them, it would be get out of Canada and never risk stepping foot in it again.
Yeah.
When Justin Trudeau's gone, if you end up with like Pierre Poilievre taking over, that something like that, maybe it's different in the future. But until the Trudeau regime has been thoroughly excised, people like Peterson should not risk setting foot in Canada at all.
Maybe Mitch McConnell should give a speech on the Senate floor telling Canadians they have to remove Prime Minister Trudeau from office. Maybe that would be a good thing to do.
Of course, it would be
unprecedented for us to do that with an ally.
Yeah, it totally would, right? No American politician, especially one who spends so much time concerned about defending democracy as McConnell and Chuck Schumer and these guys, they would never call for the overthrow of a legitimately elected foreign government.
You know, we're talking about the Chuck Schumer statement today, folks. So I was being a little tongue-in-cheek there. But it's actually quite remarkable when you step back, not just the unprecedented nature of it, but the disconnect from reality. Every expert I know, I mean every expert, even those who are not maybe on my side of this, dare I say our side of this, will tell you that if Netanyahu goes, the vast likelihood is you have an even more hawkish prime minister, perhaps domestically more liberal, but foreign policy-wise more hawkish. The Israelis are in no mood for two-state solutions right now, and they think Bibi Netanyahu is actually acting a little softly.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, and it's worth noting that the opposition party in Israel already came out and denounced
yes,
the statement.
Yes, that's right. Benny Gantz said this doesn't help. Yeah.
Like, just shut up and sit down, Chucky.
You know, it goes back to the original point you were making. Why would Chuck Schumer do something like that? Why would Joe Biden retract the comment about an illegal murderer? The power and the pull of the left in their party is so evident, or so much more palpable than people recognized. Let me take a break and pick up on that part with you, Sam, because what people were saying about Joe Biden, including your Bill Maher of the world, which is, yeah, we don't like that left stuff, but that's not Joe Biden. That's not Chuck Schumer. Those guys represent the moderate part of the Democratic Party. And I think it's false. Sam Stone and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Sam Stone is my guest. He is my guest most Thursdays. He's a political consultant in town and a radio host, Breaking Battlegrounds, heard here every Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. Follow him on Twix at Sam the Paul, P-O-L. Sam, the notion that there is a moderate Democratic Party, I thought it ended somewhere around 2006 when the party threw Joe Lieberman out. That told me everything I needed to know. I think this has been
a long time dead, the idea of a moderate Democratic Party. What we're seeing with Israel and Hamas, what we're seeing with all these things, illegal immigration, what we're seeing with crime, it's just palpably not a liberal party anymore. It is palpably, tangibly, and visibly a party of the left, and perhaps, if not enthralled with, borderline Marxist.
Oh, I think I wouldn't say borderline. Okay. I would say Marxist.
Okay.
You know, you're right.
They certainly tolerate them. They certainly tolerate the Marxists. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Well, they don't merely tolerate them. They advance them at every opportunity in every area.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't dispute at all that today's left, which is guiding the Democrat Party, is a Marxist, Marxist ideological construct. So, but, you know, I think 2006 is probably a good timeline. I don't think you're wrong. And what's been left is a very toxic mix, because the Pelosi's, the Schumer's, Jerry Nadler's and company, I don't think they believe a single word that comes out of their mouth most days.
Okay.
I think they are just there for power.
Okay.
And they have a lot of it and are intending to keep and expand it. And they're using, because of the apathy of the average voter and of the, you know, what it was or is the moderate middle of the Democrat Party is essentially a very apathetic group of people who, you know, they don't want crazy. They want reasonably liberal social policy, but they want reasonable taxes, this, that, and the other, right? Those folks are still voting Democrat, even though the party doesn't align with them on almost anything, I think out of ignorance of what they're aligned with these days. But they're a very manipulable group as a result, right? And then you have these politicians who have no ideological standing and background, who really don't believe in anything but their own self-advancement and power for them and their friends and allies. And they have made a deal with the devil in this far-left Marxist movement that has now taken over the party. They were the activists. They were the ones who put the boots on the ground. The appearance of an Ocasio-Cortez scared the heck out of the old line Democrats, and they just turned everything over to these folks, give lip service to it, you know, knowing that, quite frankly, the harm they're doing does not affect them in their wealthy gated communities. It doesn't affect them in their chartered jet flights. It just affects everyone else, and they don't care.
A serious party that cared about this notion would have, if you were in the presidency, fired the guy at the Department of Defense we were quoting earlier, including the hundreds of employees who protested their own administration on foreign policy.
Oh, every one of them gone instantly.
Right? Yeah. They would have done that. They would have funded the primary challengers to AOC and Ilhan Omar rather than Ilhan Omar and AOC against their primary challengers. They would have voted for censures of Ilhan Omar and for the removal of her from her Foreign Relations Committee perch. They've done none of that. As you say, they have coddled it, nurtured it, watered it, and encouraged it.
Because it's useful to them in that hunt for power.
You
know, I mean, it's only possible with a public. This was always one of the things. I was involved years ago, right at the start, actually, of the D.C. administration with the Joe Foss Institute and their civics education initiative.
Sure.
And
this was the idea that everyone had to graduate. To graduate high school, you had to take the civics exam.
Yeah.
Let me take a commercial break and you talk about this on the other side. Is that okay?
Just so
you get the full story out. It's an interesting project that launched. So I'm curious to hear your takeaway from it. Sam Stone is my guest. Breaking Battlegrounds is his radio show, heard every Saturday morning here at 9 a.m. You can follow him on Twitter, X, Twix, at Sam the Paul, P-O-L. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Sam Stone is my guest. Follow him on Twix at Sam the Paul, P-O-L. Sam, you were making a point about a civics initiative you were part of with the Joe Foss Institute.
Yeah, we went around the country, and I think about 24 states initially and maybe 30 or so now have adopted this that requires the graduating seniors to take and pass the USCIS civics exam, which is pretty straightforward and quite quite frankly, easy. But as I was doing that and as I was doing a lot of media around it, I thought it was very important to really steep myself in the founding and in the construct of our civic life here in this country and our institutions. And, you know, one of the things that struck me, I love the period of the founding because they were such vociferous letter writers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, things that would happen in a phone call today and be totally lost to history go back and forth in huge letter volumes between the various individuals. And so you really get, if you're willing to spend the time, a deep dive into the thought processes that created this country.
Right.
And one of the key thoughts, one of the key premises behind the creation of the United States and the system of the government we have is that we would have a highly educated electorate.
Right.
That was well informed about current and historical affairs and could be active and intelligent participants in their own future. And as I said on numerous interviews at the time, you know, when you think about it, our country is not a minivan going down the road at 45. Our country is designed to be a sports car with a manual transmission, no anti-lock brakes, and you better darn well know how to use it if you don't want to go flying off the road.
I love that.
And the problem now is we're a nation of minivan drivers.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at our president and vice president, just to start.
Yeah, fundamentally, this is the problem.
Yeah.
I think when you look at it, and it's deliberate, too, I truly believe deliberate on the part of the left to dumb down the electorate, because uneducated people, you know, there's always all these videos you see of these young students who have these ideas and beliefs. Oh, women are oppressed. And someone asked, give me an example of how women are oppressed. And, you know, the spinning bar goes on. They can't come up with anything.
Right.
Because they're not oppressed.
Right.
Right.
I've seen this any number of ways asked. Yeah, you bet. Keep going.
But fundamentally, the reason they can hold those viewpoints is they don't understand oppression. They don't understand our history. They don't understand our government, this country, its institutions. And so they can be told things and believe them on faith, which leftism, you have to understand, I've come to the conclusion that leftism is a religious construct.
It's something very close to it. It's either religious or cultish.
Cultish,
yeah, one of the two. I guess that's not too much of a distinction, but at the extreme version of it. But you reposted a friend of mine's comments today. I'm pretty good friends with someone named Batya Unger-Sargon. She edits Newsweek Opinion. She last time she was on my show, we were going through a version of this conversation, and she said, on top of your point, Sam, that the Democratic Party, her phrase, has a manufacturing conveyor belt called the university system. They just crank them out by the millions every year, and they're getting dumber and dumber and lefter and lefter.
Yes. And that's exactly right.
And at a certain point, after 40 years, 50 years of it, I show you the times.
Yes. And look, it is very deliberate. You know, it's one of the ways you can keep control, and we see this more and more now with the international far-left order, is they're looking at essentially a very hard caste stratified society where there will be this, you know, and they all envision themselves as part of this upper group, but this group of techno elites who will determine everything.
Yep.
And everyone else who will simply follow the orders they're given.
Yep. Yep.
And you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say yes. And it's related actually to the highlight of the quote that you reposted on her, which is what was her wake up card? You know, the three of us actually used to be on the left, right? It's fair to say that of you, isn't it?
Yeah.
The three of us used to be lefties. Batya, you, me. It's interesting. For she and me, it was a wake up call on race issues. Was it for you two? Was it a race issue for you two? For us, it was.
It actually wasn't a race issue for me.
Okay.
So it was for me. It was identity politics versus individual civil rights.
Okay. So not totally unrelated.
Race, obviously,
yeah.
It's just I grew up as you know, as a hardcore civil libertarian.
Yeah.
I remain a hardcore civil libertarian.
Yeah.
But the Democrat Party, which once in large measure embraced civil libertarianism, threw it out. And, you know, the other element to it, which always made me uncomfortable and made me a bit of an outcast within the, you know, the left, if you will, or the Democrat Party. I was more of a blue dog, but was the race stuff. And very simply, it was that having grown up in and around Eastern elite white society, I had never met a Republican, conservative, blue-collar person who was remotely as racist in their outlook and worldview and how they interacted with people of color as white, rich liberals.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It was so blatant.
The paternalism,
that.
Right?
The paternalism,
the kind of thing Boccia was talking about. Her wake-up call was a study out of Yale and 2008, saying that liberal people deliberately speak down to blacks, dumb down their conversation to black Americans, right? That was the same concept. Yes, go ahead.
And I saw that close up.
Yep.
You know, I had a friend named Yves Jean, who's gone on, he's a musician, he's gone on to be fairly successful in a number of areas, but very nice kid I went to school with, right? None of us who went to school with him, you know, and we're all the Gen X generation, none of us dumbed down our conversation with him. Eves is an incredibly bright guy.
Yeah.
He's one of the smartest kids in our school, right? But I would routinely see wealthy, white, Democrat adults who would talk to this kid like he was an infant.
Yep. And you see a version of the whole idea of voting ID.
Yeah, that's exactly
blacks can't,
it.
Don't have access to getting, all of it. Gosh, Sam, the only regret I really have in interviewing you in my third hour is you finished the show with me right at the time when you're waking my brain up to so many fertile issues I want to spend more time on.
I know. I could go on a lot of this stuff for a while here.
Well, you have a day job as well on your own radio show. Again, folks, you can catch Sam every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. right here on this station, Breaking Battlegrounds. Sam Stone, go get him. Have fun.
Always. You too.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you soon. I'm Seth Leibson, and I'll have a final thought. Portions of this show are brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. They have a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. With YRefi, you can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you like. With YRefi, there are absolutely no fees. With YRefi, there is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. And, of course, with YRefi, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or give them a call at 888-YREFI-24, 888-YREFI-24. If you are online, go to 960thepatriot.com. Check out our Fighting for Freedom event on March 26. You can get tickets there. Mike Gallagher, Brandon Tatum, me, we'll be talking about all these issues involving the election with you. 960thepatriot.com for Fighting for Freedom. Which is March 26th at Arizona Christian University. I expect to see you there. I look forward to seeing you there. I'll close with this audio from Boccia Sargon that I was quoting with Sam. Bear with.
In 2018, I had come across a study that was so disturbing to my worldview that I remember putting it in a drawer and saying, I am not ready to deal with what this means. And in 2019, that no longer became available to me. And let me tell you a little bit about this study. The study was a 2018 Yale study, and it found that there is a difference between how white liberals and white conservatives talk to blacks and Hispanics. And here is the difference between how white liberals and white conservatives talk to people of color. White liberals dumb down their vocabulary when they encounter a person who has darker skin than them. And I thought to myself, and we call them, the white conservatives who don't do this, the racists? I mean, it was an obvious indictment of the entire worldview that has gripped the left, this wokeness. And I started to see that everywhere, that sort of patronizing idea that a person of color has no agency, no responsibility to act morally. And I think this is what you're seeing with the left's attitude toward Hamas, to bring this back to something relevant to today.
She's absolutely right about that study. I looked it up, and boy, sure is right. There it is, from a professor of organizational studies at Yale. The title of the study is Self-Presentation in Interracial Settings, The Competence Downshift by White Liberals. The Competence Downshift by White Liberals. Paternalism. Paternalism. Wanting you and thinking you are stupid. That's liberal leftism today. It woke her up. It woke me up. It looks like it woke Sam Stone up. I hope it wakes more people up. Until tomorrow, on behalf of David Dahl, Mr. Bill, and Miss Terry, God bless you all. I am Seth Leibson, and class is dismissed.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.